WKTJ.
Okay, your old transmitter was plus 77.8 dBm with 17 dB of antenna gain, brought you up to plus 94.8. Your new transmitter at 4.8 kilowatts is 66.8 dBm with 13 dB of antenna gain, brings you up to 79 total, and the difference between the two is 14.9 dB. How about that? So it appears as though digital television is 14 dB superior. You have reason to believe you'll have the same approximate grade B coverage with 14 dB less power. Eric, go ahead.
Yeah, actually, in the best of worlds, yes. In the reality of the world, there's some places where it holds true and some places where it doesn't. Has a lot to do with a lot of things, including terrain. So, but these are the things that the FCC is working with at the moment. So, you know, you have to play by their rules. But, yeah. But there's another aspect to this, that there is the ability of your being able to create a symbol that doesn't have any jitter in it to begin with. So the better you can do that, the easier time the receivers are going to have at the edge of your grade B signal. So there's lots of little things that can add and take away from your ability to reach that larger audience. And there actually is a theoretical limit to the algorithm as to what kind of carrier to noise you can create just by creating it. So there are some limiting factors there. But a smart engineer or somebody who really understands how you make a BSC will try to bring his numbers as high as he possibly can, still keep it inside the mask, because the theoretical number that's required, the minimum number that transmitter is, all the transmitter manufacturers consider that minus 27 dB carrier to noise ratio as the place to be. They don't think that there's any gain in doing better numbers than that, but I beg to differ with them one heck of a lot, and so do a lot of other people. K2RWK2J.
And one of the things that becomes immediately apparent, and Joe has already seen this, when you look at a modern-day digital television transmission on a well-calibrated high dynamic range spectrum analyzer, you'll be mildly amazed at how fast the skirts of that signal fall off beyond the band edges of the allocated frequency region, the 6 meg region over which you're allowed to transmit, and where all of that beautiful envelope, as it's called, is coming from is some very elaborate filtering. Kent, WA5DJB, has mailed me some photographs of the filter that's being used at the broadcast station that he frequently visits in the Dallas area of Texas. I've been to Eric's location, and I've seen some of the filtering that he uses. Really great big...
The cans get hot.
The cans get hot. Great big black cans with all kinds of gold-plated looking tuning slugs on the side of them. This very elaborate filter is where that beautiful envelope is coming from. Wonder how much of all of this jazz you've been listening to tonight, Eric, and Kent, and maybe you want to put in a couple of words before we readjust Joe's problem on the sensitivity of his receiver, of his repeater that we didn't properly answer last week. From A5EJB for any other comments, K2RIW in the tech tent.
Okay, KQRIW and the multitude of WA5DJB. Buy a new converter? What? You're not happy with that second generation unit I shipped you last year? I still say your main need is an antenna on the outside. When it gets to octane, yeah, I've been involved in some of that. When they mixed tetraethyl lead in there, that was great. Your problem with the high ignition is that the compression of the cylinder tends to make it explode before it gets to the top dead center, so you get pre-ignition and knock. And high-octane gas is simply gasoline which has things in it to keep it from burning too quickly. Tetraethyl lead was fine, but today they tend to use alcohol. Alcohol has half as much energy in it as gasoline. So if your car got 20 miles a gallon of gas, it would only get about 10 on alcohol. So today, you get more miles per gallon on the regular than you do with the higher octane type ratings. You actually get more miles per gallon on the cheap stuff than you do the expensive stuff. Now, if you're driving a 73 Cadillac with a nice big 11-to-1 compression ratio engine, you have to use it. But if your car doesn't knock on the regular, you get more miles per gallon. Lastly, what totally surprises me is this group has spent, what, about 3 hours talking about that power supply choke that does unusual things, and yet no one has volunteered to actually do an autopsy on it and find out what's really wrong with it. And I did try and check in about a half hour ago when you called, but didn't let me in. WA5BKB.
Oh boy, are we going to have fun with him. Okay. Boy, did you open the door. If we mail you a choke, are you volunteering to do a autopsy, a postmortem, and find out what happened with that particular so-called defective choke? Are you volunteering to do that, Kent? WA5BJB, KQRIW. The silence is deafening. I think I know the answer to that one. Although I think I did hear his telephone ringing in the background. I think he got a landline, so it could be coincidental. I know that you made some brand new measurements. And by the way, that is fascinating. The fact that the higher octane gas these days contains alcohol. Alcohol has, according to Kent, roughly half the number of BTU per gallon of real energy content. Therefore, you think you're doing a great favor for your automobile by feeding it the expensive gasoline if it doesn't need it, and you give it high test when it really only needs regular, and he claims you're going to get a lot less gas mileage. So dollar for dollar, it doesn't sound like a good deal.
Hey, Dick?
Yeah, go ahead, Eric.
I kind of have heard that conversation. Did anybody make mention of the fact that when you add octane, actually what you're doing is you're causing the gasoline not to have pre-detonation. So what you're really doing is, you can think of it as adding anti-knock compound to it. Oh, and by the way, as far as the oil company is concerned, it doesn't have to be octane. It can be isohexane. It can be any other number of ingredients, including alcohol, as long as it creates the burn rate and the pre-detonation rate of the octane value. So it doesn't matter what they make it out of.
Yeah, Eric, turns out Ken did mention that, and you were probably away at the time. But his main point is that alcohol-bearing fuels have less energy content. They'll get less gas mileage out of it. And if you need the alcohol to be added in order to get the anti-knock characteristic, because you're running a high compression engine, you're going to get less mileage. But you need it in order to stop the knocking, which could do engine damage. And if you take a modern automobile, which is rated for normal gas, and you give it high octane gas, the super premium or whatever, you may not be doing yourself a favor. You're probably going to get less mileage if you don't need it. It's not the right thing to do, according to Ken. Let's go over to Joe, who said he's made a brand new set of measurements, and we didn't handle the situation correctly last week. Let's see if we can do some correction this week. WHURYY, what were your new measurements, Joe? K2RIW in the TechNet.
K2RIW in TechNet, WHURYY. Okay, what measurement do you want first? Maybe it's better if I give you the information you request than just telling you everything at once.
Well, let me bring it up to speed. Last week you had made a measurement directly at the front door, the antenna connector of the repeater, and you measured -122, which is beautiful. You then wanted to find out what would the sensitivity be when it's connected to its normal antenna, and if this was the best of all worlds, the nice way to do that measurement would be to connect the antenna to the repeater, but first connect it to one of those bugs, a little coupling device that you can adjust for a 30 dB coupling coefficient, and crank up the signal. That would have been nice. I know you didn't have one of those available to you. What you used instead is you plug the signal into a second antenna on the same tower. And if we knew the decibels of insertion loss between antenna number 2 and antenna number 1, the normal antenna for the repeater, we would have known what's going on. However, because because that insertion loss is something like 45 or 50 dB, you would only be able to make that measurement if your receiving device on antenna number two was, let's say, a spectrum analyzer of an IFR, and it only has a sensitivity of something like minus 70, and if the IFR only puts out something like plus 20, you're shy on dBs here, because if you don't have at least 10 decibels of carrier-to-noise ratio on the screen of a spectrum analyzer, then interpreting carrier strength off the screen of a spectrum analyzer does become difficult. It requires another mathematical calculation for signal plus noise to noise ratio. And you've got to also worry about the non-linearity of the log IF of the spectrum analyzer when you're down at threshold. So I know you ran into some of those problems. As such, you made the measurement from antenna number two into the preamp output from a point inside of the repeater. That's what you did last week, and that's a somewhat difficult way to go. It can be done that way, but it's a difficult way to go. I sort of attacked you viciously on that method of approach last week. I should have gone a little easier on you, not realizing what limitations you had. I wasn't, and I'm not an IFR user, so I wasn't smart enough to know some of these limitations. And so, had you used that preamplifier, let me drop. Had you used that preamplifier as a completely separate device, boosting up the power output of the IFR and ramming the power output of the preamplifier into antenna number two, while you measured the power output from antenna number one, although it's a crazy sounding arrangement, it would have been a little bit more traceable to the Bureau, but there's a bunch of complicated reasons as to why that's true. Okay, so I sort of told you what I think took place. I now have a lot more understanding of why you did it that way, and I think you've done something different this week. Tell us what you did different. From B2RYY, K2RIW.
Okay, here goes. I did it more towards your method of doing things. I put 0 dBm out of the generator, and the generator is capable of running duplex, so I can transmit and receive on the same frequency at the same time with the analyzer running and the generator running. It's capable of doing that. I put 0 dBm into one antenna, and into the other antenna, I hooked that to the spectrum analyzer through a 6 dB pad, because yours like 6 dB pads, because it's a nice 50 ohm impedance. And I got a reading of minus 65 dB.
Okay. Minus 65 dBm, I presume you meant, out of the spectrum analyzer. When 0 dBm, I'm amazed your signal generator goes that high. Or maybe it was a different signal gen, not the IFR. And 6 dB pad, that would imply 59 decibels of loss antenna to antenna. Is that the way you read that one, Joe? Go ahead.
Yeah, let me describe the instrument really quick. The instrument is a variable output generator. It's capable of going from 0 dBm down to minus 127, continuously variable, okay?
I'm with you. Go ahead.
All right, so I now have the path loss between antenna 1 to antenna 2. The next thing I wanted to measure was the gain of the preamp itself, putting a signal into the repeater cabinet, into the duplexer, and looking at the output of the preamp. Also did that with a 6 dB pad, because you like 6 dB pads. I got a gain of plus 12.5. I used a minus 60 dBm signal going in, and my signal on my analyzer was 12.5 dB higher than that.
Okay, I think I understand that one. Go ahead.
Okay, third measurement I did. I did a direct SINED reading of the receiver itself. These type of receivers, as old as they are, they made two different models. One was a standard receiver, and one was called UHS. Stands for ultra high sensitivity, and they are. Because the SINED of the receiver itself, without the preamp, is minus 121.0 for 12 dB SINED.
That's also good.
Okay, then I took the signal generator and put it to the top of the cabinet directly and got a reading through the duplexer, through the preselector filter, which is in front of the preamp, through the preamp going to the receiver, I got a reading of -123.0 dBm, 412 dB SINAD.
Even better than the -122 last week. And by the way, one other thing that I just did, the measurement you just told me before, where you set the SIGGEN at zero, and with a 6 dB pad, you measured -65 dBm. And if I take 6 away from 65, I end up with 59. That implies that you've got roughly 59 dB of decibels of difference between the two antennas. And last week, when you did the SINAD measurement into antenna number 2, 12 dB SINAD requires a signal of -60. If I take the -122 that you measured barefoot last week and increase it by 59, I get -63. You measured 60, I calculate -63. Therefore, with the new information you just gave me a few minutes ago, there's only a 3 decibel discrepancy between feeding a SINAD signal into antenna number 2 and measure the repeater response, as opposed to feeding a SINAD signal directly into the repeater and measure a SINAD response. There's only 3 dB of slight difference right now, and that might be rather easy to explain, but I know I've jumped off to one side. It's your choice. WHYY, KQRIW.
I use better quality cables for measuring at this time than last time. Last time I was using RG-142, which is really probably not the best. Even in short lengths of 6 feet or so, they do have a little bit more loss. The other cable I was using was basically quarter-inch superflex.
Very nice. So, I think the measurements are now starting to make a bit more sense, but you probably made even more measurements. So back to you, Joe.
Well, remember we had this discussion previously a couple of months ago, and I asked you about receivers, and you said that with gain-starved receivers, a preamp buys a lot. If the preamp is on a system and you don't see much difference, the receiver is probably getting about the most it can get to begin with, because, like I said, my direct reading was -121.0 for 12 SINAD, and through the repeated duplex of band field filter and preamp, it only went up to -123. That's the best it goes. And I can accept that.
Yeah, part of what I was worried about last week, and you're on that subject right now, is that if I had a so-called barefoot repeater, in other words, I got a repeater hooked up in the normal manner to a duplexer to a single antenna. This is not a split site, it's a single site type repeater. And I measure a certain amount of receiver sensitivity. And someone comes along with a preamp and a bandpass filter in front of it and says, gee, this thing has got 1 dB of noise figure, Joe. Why don't you throw it in there? It's got 15 dB of gain. It's got 1 dB of noise figure. And you plug in that 15 dB gain, and I'm talking about gain with the bandpass filter that's in front of it. If that combination of bandpass filter plus preamp, L and A, has 15 dB of gain, and you suddenly put it in after the receiver output port of the duplexer into the rest of the receiver of the repeater, you plug it into the right spot, the preamp. That 15 dB of gain, of course, is not going to give you 15 dB of improvement in sensitivity. It might give you, let me pick a number, 5. And what you're really doing, you could say, is you're making a 5 decibel improvement in the overall noise figure of the receiver system of the repeater. So 15 dB of gain is not going to make 15 dB of improvement. It's going to make, in my example, 5 dB improvement. In some cases, it's only going to make 3. That's going forward, adding a preamp. If you take out a preamp that's got 15 dB of gain, by the same token, it's not going to make a 15 dB gain change in sensitivity. It's going to make the same 5 dB of my example. So the apparent nonlinearity of the decibels of gain of a preamp not giving you that number of decibels of improvement in sensitivity, I think many people will understand that. Some people will have trouble with it. I guess my first question is, does that sort of make sense so far? WHYY, KQRIW.
Well, the reason I'm doing all this, you know, when you take all these figures and so forth, is to try to determine the actual on the air sensitivity the repeater or receiver I'm using is actually capable of hearing. That's what I'm trying to do. You know, when you talk about all these other subjects about antennas, and I did this and that, and I'm running so much power, so what you're receiving is also very important also, because if you don't know what you're capable of actually receiving down to a certain point, you know, it doesn't really say too much. I like to know what the thing is capable of doing, actual down, you know, actual real performance in the real world. This is why I'm trying to make these kind of measurements.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And you're doing a real, what a medical person would call an in situ measurement. Within the living animals, you're making the measurement under the real working conditions. In situ, I think it's pronounced sometimes. And you're doing it with the repeater connected to the real antenna. I am curious, have you ever measured the standing wave ratio at the operating frequencies of antenna number one? You probably have. And what you're doing by feeding a signal into antenna number two, as long as that antenna has got a fixed position and a known insertion loss to antenna number one, you're doing a better measurement than if you use that little bug device, as people call it, that thing that's got 30 dB injector, 30 dB insertion loss injector, this tiny little device that you put between the antenna and the repeater, and it's got a third port where you can inject a signal through it, and you calibrate it. When you do it by that method, yes, you're measuring the sensitivity of the repeater while it's connected to the antenna, but you're not measuring the sensitivity through the antenna, because you're bypassing the antenna, so to speak, with this third port of this device that you're putting in between the antenna and the repeater. So where you're going through the real repeater, you are working under real working conditions where any VSWR characteristics of the antenna are taken into account, any strong local signals that might be creating desensitization, you're taking it all into account all at once when you plug the signal into the second antenna. The only hard part about this approach is that right now the numbers you gave me suggest that there's 59 decibels of insertion loss between the antennas, and to measure 59 decibels accurately to the nearest dB or so, with some kinds of instrumentation, represents a little bit of a difficulty. But it's beginning to sound like you've overcome that one. W2RYY, KQRIW.
Yeah, I gave it up for there in case the other guy in Texas wanted to chime in any comments, whatever, because I know, I think the repeater's got a totally dropper, his echo link stuff will work. Well, if I take the 59 dB differential between the two antennas, knowing what I'm putting in, and I put it, it takes a minus 60 dBm signal to give me 12 sine ads with the repeater connected. That tells me with calculations that it looks like I have a receiver sensitivity through the entire installation on the air of minus 119. All right? That's what that one is. Now, I did a test on a different repeater I have at my house. Much newer equipment, 20 years newer. Let me give you some figures I got on that one. Path loss between the antenna 1 and antenna 2, minus 69 dB. Again, I deal with a 6 dB pad, so that becomes 63. Preamp gain from the duplexer input to output of the preamp with a 6 dB pad on the output of the preamp, plus 13.5. Sinet direct of that particular receiver, it's not as good as the other GE. That was minus 114.0 for 12 Sinet without a preamp. With a preamp through the duplexer, I was getting a much better reading than the GE stuff does. It went down the 12 dB Sinet, minus 125.5. Interesting. It took a minus 63 dBm level signal to give me 12 dB sinead again. So if I take the 69 minus 6 minus 63 dBm plus the other minus 63 dB differential, that tells me my sensitivity at the repeater of the house is minus 126. Seemed like it's a lot more sensitive. And that may account for why the repeater just doesn't simply work as well as I thought it would work, because there is other stuff up there, producing stuff on the input, producing transmitter noise or whatever, and this is exactly what I've been trying to measure to determine how useful the repeater actually is, because anybody can take a generator, put it in the repeater, into the duplexer with it, not on the air, and say, oh, everything works fine, it looks real good. Hook it up the antenna, well, now it's a different story.
Yep, and that's a very smart measurement to make when connected to a real antenna. That second repeater you talked about, 63 dB of antenna loss in that situation, minus 63 dBm of signal level required to 12 dB of sine air, calculates to minus 126. And boy, we're getting down to a very small number of microvolts, which I'm about to come up with as to what is a minus 126. I'll be back to you in about a minute. You can go ahead and talk if you like.
Well, minus 127 is 0.1, so it's very slightly over 0.1, okay? But the whole application of all this, Dick, is anybody can do this with test equipment if you accurately measure it. You could even do it on your own stuff on 432. You can put a signal in from some other antenna in the Tower Tower. And I do understand that the difference between when you're putting a signal in from one antenna to another, if anything moves around you at all, anything, it's going to change the path even slightly between antenna 1 and antenna 2. At my house, I was getting some variation of about maybe half a dB, maybe a little more, as one antenna maybe moved slightly in the wind, so I can account for that. On the repeater building, my two antennas are fixed and mounted on the pipe. There's nothing else that was moving around that particular day. It was a fairly still, calm day out, so the station master wasn't moving back and forth. I had no other issues that I knew of that would alter the signal path of any kind of degree that I could measure from point to point.
Yeah, out of curiosity, minus 126, I know you said it's 126 in a fraction, minus 126 dBm on a 50-ohm cable is 0.11 microvolts. By my standards, that is a hot system. 0.11 microvolts. I mean, a handy talkie that works at half a microvolt we think is hot. A repeater at 0.1 microvolt, 0.11 microvolt. Wow. You got to be reasonably happy with that. Over to you, Eric. I mean, not Joe.
Well, one part that you really determine here, if I'm doing this measurement correctly, as far as you can ascertain with the information, the data I'm giving you, does it sound like I'm going in the right direction trying to measure this?
Boy, you are. I'm in strong agreement right now. And the only thing to find out now is that when you're putting the signal into antenna number 2 with a SIG generator, and you're measuring 12 dB of sine air out of your repeater that's connected to antenna number 1, that's a beautiful in situ measurement in the living animal under the working condition. Beautiful way of making measurement. Better than the way the average guy does it. The next step would be to turn on the transmitter, because your signal generator producing the signal for the 12 dB sine air measurement is 59 or 63 dB away. The transmitter is not going to hurt that signal generator, I believe. So therefore, you can now measure the new sine wave measurement with your transmitter turned on to find out if your own transmitter is creating any descent. And half the repeaters in the world do create some amount of descent, measurable amount of descent. And if it's anything more than a tenth of a dB, there's a very subtle problem it creates, which I'll go into on the next transmission. So, wonder if you've considered doing the sine wave measurement with signal for sine wave measurement into antenna number 2 while the repeater is producing the sine wave signal with its transmitter turned on. WQRYY, KQRIW.
The IFR 1500 service monitor has what's called a PR port, which is normally where the signal comes in and out of the unit as far as power measurements. It can take power in and the signal normally comes out. It has another port, which is called a duplex port, which normally gives you the same output as the TR port. When the generator is in the duplex mode, however, the duplex port is offset to the TR port by a factor of 40 dB, so it'll burn the thing up. But you can put power into this instrument and transmit at the same time as you can put a signal that is removed by 40 dB. So the instrument I'm using is a very, very versatile service monitor, and I have checked the repeater directly on the repeater itself, and there's no measurable descents I can see. It's very, very small. And even off the air, I got a reading of, let's see, minus 60 dBm for 12 Sinet. With the transmitter on, I had to move the dial to 59.5. So 1 dB, I can live with that. Can you?
Yeah, the 60 to 59.5 is a half a dB of descent. And half a dB of descent is not bad. And now I guess you'd really like to know what's the disadvantage of a half a dB of descent. Half a dB to 1 dB of descent, without a doubt, is tolerable. But there's a catch. And the catch is the descent quite often is because some stage in the receiver chain is going into limiting by leakage of transmitter signal. And a half dB of change in its gain due to limiting at first sounds small, unless your filtering and shielding everywhere is perfect. A half dB of limiting represents a degree of nonlinearity of that stage, and if there's more than one signal present in that stage, if any other signal from any other place other than the desired signal gets there, and the signal is being limited by half a dB, that means that that stage is simultaneously acting not only as an amplifier, but also as a mixer. And it's going to mix all possible combinations, so-called M by N products, mic by November products of that signal, all your 2x3s and 3x4s and 5x7s and whatever. And if any one of them falls into your receiver channel, you will have an intermod performance that sometimes is not friendly. So it's not a problem as long as no other signal is present in that stage that is doing the half dB of limiting. But if any other undesired signal gets there simultaneously, it could create some grief. If this is the best of all worlds, you'd like to have almost no descent when the transmitter is turned on. W-H-U-R-Y-Y, K-H-U-R-I-W.
Okay, it's another piece of information which I measured at another time when I put the repeater together, and it really hasn't changed. I have checked it previously. When the transmitter is on, I see out of the preamp itself, looking on the transmit frequency, that carrier is about approximately minus 60 dBm. And the power of the transmitter is 70 watts. 70 watts going into the duplexer, actually 70 watts going into an isolator. And I don't recall what the exact ones, of course, the isolator is not very much. And the duplexer is about 1.4 dB a loss across the duplexer. It's got very good TX-RX noise suppression. It's good, better than 120 dB. As far as my instrumentation can tell, it's like about minus 124, 126, something like that. It's quite excessive, but you know, it also takes a little bit to carefully tune something like this too to get to be that incredibly sharp. Tuning is everything.
Yeah, 70 watts of transmitter is plus 48.5 dBm. You measured a power output of minus 60. Therefore, they differ by 108.5 dB. An ordinary type N connector, some people don't trust it beyond 90 dB of shielding. So the instrumentation by which you hooked up the output of the preamp into the power sensing device, which probably was a spectrum analyzer of an IFR, the minus 60 that you measured could be pessimistic. You're pushing the state-of-the-art of the shielding of the cable that coupled the signal out of the preamp into the spectrum analyzer. When that is hooked up in the normal manner to the receiver with the normal dressing of those cables, it's possible the minus 60 dBm signal from the transmitter at that preamplifier output maybe in the real world is not that bad. So you had 108.5 dB of power difference between transmitter and what you measured. That's getting close to not being completely trustable on the shielding of the connectors and the quality of the way the connector is connected to the end of that flexible piece of cable. Was every single piece of cable and all of that setup double shielded and so on? You see what I'm getting at here, Joe? That measurement could be a little pessimistic. W-H-U-R-Y-Y, K-H-U-R-I-W.
The cabling coming out of the duplexer going to the antenna connection is RG214, which is double shielded. All the other cabling in the repeater I'm using is RG142.
I should know what 142 is. Is that semi-rigid? Is that double shielded, flexible? What is 142?
RG142 is double shielded, basically RG58 type of cable. That's essentially what that stuff is.
Yeah, the real RG-58 that's double shielded is called RG-223. RG-148, I got to look that one up. RG-148. And maybe it's the same stuff with just another manufacturer's model number. And the cable coming out of the preamplifier into the IFR spectrum analyzer, that also was 148. Go ahead.
That's RG-142. Yes, I also use that for my measurement cables also, and I do know there's leakage because if you move the cables around, you'll see the level change very slightly. But this is the best of what I'm getting. It's not bad. It's better than some of the installations I've seen.
Okay, it's darn good. You did say some magic words. When you move the cables around, that minus 60 dBm signal coming out of the preamp, you would see that level move a little bit. Is that what you said, Joe? Go ahead.
That is correct. The cabling going to my instrument and the cabling, well, not so much the cabling or repeater, probably more the cabling on my instrument. I was the actual output of the preamp itself directly fed into the service monitor. That time I measured without using a 6 dB preamp because I just want to know the right signal, the correct level. I don't think the 6 dB preamp would make a lot of difference. I don't know, do you?
No, I don't. Of any of these signals that you measured, when the carrier you're measuring on the screen of a spectrum analyzer is not 10 decibels above the noise, the measurement becomes a little bit more difficult to interpret. Should I go into some words on that one, Joe? Go ahead.
Well, are you starting to talk about the bottom end sensitivity of the instrument? Typically, anything below minus 100 is pretty much unreliable. You really can't rely on the analyzer part of the instrument. And the receiver portion of the instrument is probably capable of around 2.5 microholes of sensitivity. That's the best it's going to do. It's not a sensitive receiver inside these service monitors. It's not meant to be.
Okay. You just said some magic words. I think you told me that your spectrum analyzer on your IFR, or your service monitor, whatever brand name it is, can measure down to minus 100. Up till now, I was told they're only good to minus 70. Yours goes to minus 100, in which case you have the ability to measure directly insertion loss between two antennas. Back to you, Joe.
Oh, yeah, definitely. The front end of the spectrum analyzer has a switchable 20 dB padding, zero attenuation, 20 dB attenuation, 40. I could take the 0 dBm signal from the instrument itself, feed it back into the analyzer front end, put the 40 dB pad, I could see it on the minus 30 dB graticle on the screen. I actually have the 40 dB graticle on the screen. Yes, it is capable of doing that, but going the other way down to a very, very low level signal, this makes the analyzer not very good for doing, like, tuning up duplexes. They really don't work very well, even with the tracking dinner function. But if I want to tune up something very, very well and do a precise job of it, I use my HP 8594 with a external preamp. That does a good job.
Okay, so I think you're saying your spectrum analyzer function of your service monitor, which maybe is an IFR, tell me that one for sure, goes down to minus 100. That's its noise level. Minus 100 dBm when you dial in 0 dB of RF attenuation in front of it. In which case, that's a fairly nice, sensitive spectrum analyzer. Various people over the week have told me they're only good to minus 70. Either they were giving me wrong information, or yours is hotter than normal, or yours has a preamp in front of it. I'm not quite sure what all is going on. But let's assume now that you put nothing into that spectrum analyzer. Well, first of all, let me confirm everything that I said so far. Back to you, Joe.
You're going to ask me what the noise reading on the analyzer is without the nothing plugged in. It's about minus 105. I think the screen actually has a markings down to minus 110, or that much difference between the top of the screen, which is minus 30, down to the bottom of the screen. The center of the screen, I think, is minus 70, so that's what kind of range you're talking about, 40 dB plus or minus from minus 70. So that's the range of things. As far as the screen calibration, you'll typically get a reading about minus 105, 106, 107, something like that, with just noise with nothing plugged into the analyzer input. But I tried in reality, even looking at itself, putting a known signal in with known modulation, you really can't read what's there. It's just not reliable. And they tell you that in the specifications of the instrument. It's not meant to look at something that sensitive. So for real-world stuff, I can't take the analyzer and hook it up to even the output of the repeater, even at the preamp. I'm not going to see stuff the receiver can hear. I just simply, the service monitor simply can't do that. Even looking like in that kind of situation, I could not see stuff the receiver could possibly hear. So I don't use it for that type of application because there's better ways of accomplishing that.
That all makes sense. Now, for normal spectrum analyzers, a standalone Hewlett-Packard 8566, so to speak, spectrum analyzer, which has dialable IF gain, dialable RF attenuation in the front end, resolution bandwidth that you can select, sweep speed, you got all kinds of knobs. When you're in the 10 dB per centimeter display mode, and you're in the 1 megacycle resolution bandwidth mode, the noise on the screen sits at roughly minus 80 dBm, 80 dBm per megacycle. If I plug in a well-calibrated signal generator at exactly minus 80 dBm, equal to the noise, common sense would say, hey, the noise is minus 80, the signal is minus 80, the two are going to be level with each other. Good guess, that's not the way Mother Nature behaves. When the spectrum analyzer is sweeping through that CW signal of minus 80, it sees minus 80 dBm of noise power from the electronics of its IF strip. It also sees a CW signal of minus 80 dBm that you're plugging in. It adds the two together, and even though they're incoherent signals, minus 80 of noise, minus 80 of signal, it comes up with minus 77, 3 decibels of improvement. When you set the video bandwidth narrow enough so that you get a nice, clean signal on the screen, you'll see a bump in the middle of the screen of 3 dB rising above the average. 3 dB of signal plus noise to noise ratio. That is the method on normal standalone spectrum analyzers for measuring their minimum discernible signal. Threshold, call it what you like. So when the two are equal, 0 dB of carrier to noise ratio, the display will show you 3.01 dB of apparent carrier to noise ratio. So far, does that make some sense, Eric? I mean, Joe, to be KQRYY, KQRYW?
Yes, it does. I think you went through this before, and that's why I used my 8594 actually when it was working much better than it's working now. That's why I was using that for doing, a lot more precision type of measurements, and I know that's got variable bandwidth, the video bandwidth you can change the span, which I'm looking at, there's a whole bunch of combinations of different things you can do that the service monitor just does automatically. The service monitor has the spectrum analyzer can actually go from, say, full span, 0 to 1,000 megs, you can look at everything at once, but everything is not really that terribly well calibrated as far as just the relative level. It's just like we're relative looking at something to see, everything all at once. It's a little more calibrated when it goes down to, say, a range of 1 meg per horizontal division. That's when it starts to become a little more accurate as far as what you're trying to measure on the screen. But my 8594 can do a lot better than that as far as the different combinations of displays with total span looking at total resolution bandwidth, video bandwidth, and so forth. So it's a bit better instrument. That's why I use that for tuning up the duplex more than the service monitor. The service monitor really can't do what the HP can do. So okay, very good. So you can move on to the next subject. You hit this one pretty good, I guess.
Yes. Looks to me like you've got a pretty hot repeater there, Eric. I mean, Joe. Keep calling you Eric, and sorry about that. The 3 dB of signal plus noise to noise ratio, example that I would lead a person to believe that you can't go below that for signal level. And as long as you've got enough video bandwidth cranked in so that you've made the noise output look smooth, you can go considerably below that. If you only had a bump that rose 1 decibel instead of 3 decibels, common sense would lead you to believe the signal is 2 dB weaker. Because the signal plus noise to noise ratio, and if need be, I could give you the mathematics to handle that, it means that signal is not It started off equal to the noise power. That gave you the 3 dB bump. When you only get a 1 dB bump, the signal is 6.9 dB weaker. Believe it or not. So you can make a measurement 6.9 decibels below the noise power of your spectrum analyzer, as long as you're sweeping slow enough and got the right video bandwidth, so that you're looking for only 1 decibel of rise in noise power. You're now hearing the specifics of what's called radiometry, and that's the way a radio telescope works. They look for very small changes on a very stable system. So you can make measurements traceable to the bureau to some degree below the noise power of your instrumentation, and someday we'll get deeper into that. Sounds to me like, as I said, you've got pretty hot repeaters. I think you're in good shape. Let's see if we've got anybody with any further questions or comments. There's some interesting things that happened astronomy-wise this week, which I'm going to tell you guys about. And maybe we've got Paul available, WS2N. I'd like to hear a couple of words from him. So, anybody with any further questions or comments, give me your call letters and name right now, K2RIW in the TechNet.
That's A2KY. I have one question about what you mentioned about the spectrum analyzer there.
No recognized. Anyone else? Not even Kent had a question that time. Go ahead, Mel, and give us a little bit more audio if you could.
Okay. Gee, I thought I had it. Okay. Yeah, okay. I just noticed you're right. I give it a little more audio. You mentioned Hewlett Packard 8566. Now, they had a number of them, and I never found one that worked below, you know, down to, say, 100. Supposedly, it would go down to, what, minus 135 a dick. Have you ever seen one that really goes down there? And then I'll tell you why, over.
Okay, a Barefoot 8566 with no preamplifier has noise power on the screen of minus 80 dBm per megacycle. You could say that that is a 34 decibel noise figure, Barefoot. That's what it's got. That's with the 1 meg filter. The narrowest filter it had was 10 hertz. So if I go from 1 meg to 1 kilohertz, that's 30. 10 hertz, another 20. 50 dB better. 50 dB better than minus 80. You'd think I could do a simple calculation like that. Minus 130. I don't think that machine can make a measurement much below minus 125 unless you do a whole lot of screen integration, multi-step. I mean, you can make the machine do what's called a spectral overlay, where you can make it take 100 consecutive sweeps, add all of the data together of each one of those pixels. There's 1,024 horizontal displaced pixels. You could have it add the power of each of those 1,024 pixels, and do that 100 times and come up with an integrated display. With that, you can get weaker. But I wouldn't trust that machine without adding a preamp in front of it below minus 125. Put a preamp in front of it of 30 dB of gain, and now I could give you some sensitivity numbers that'll blow your mind, so to speak. Those are my opinions, Eric. Here we go. Boy, I want to call everybody Eric tonight. Mel, K2KEY, K2LIW.
That's what I say, because standalone, the best I was able to do was go to about 109 dBm, and they claimed, I spoke to Hewlett Packard, this is the 8566B, and they said, no, you could, the amplitude range is minus 134 to plus 30, and I said, I could, you're not doing this right or that right or something, but I just wanted to see, get your experience, because I think you've worked with basically the same series, Dick, over.
Why would a comment?
Joe recognized. Even with the minus 124, Mel, that's getting down to the 10 hertz resolution bandwidth filter, probably a 1 hertz video bandwidth filter, probably multiple screens of integration when you put it into that mode, and you must be at a low enough frequency where the basic stability of the oscillator within the spectrum analyzer is good to the nearest 10 hertz, and your signal generator better have enough stability, instantaneous FM stability, to stay within a 10 hertz filter. It's kind of obvious. So when you're getting down to a 10 hertz resolution bandwidth of the IF strip of the analyzer, if your particular signal generator had some residual FM of, let's say, 100 hertz, that's a fancy way of saying that your signal generator is going to spend 90% of its time outside of the bandwidth of the resolution filter of the analyzer. So in order to make measurements that weak, you have to set the knobs just right. You have to have you have to be doing it at a low enough frequency. It ain't going to do that at 22 gigs. You've got to be at a low enough frequency where the basic oscillator of the analyzer is stable enough, and your basic oscillator of your signal generator, plugging the signal into the front end, has to be stable enough. There's a whole lot of things that have got to go just right to get down to those kind of numbers. WA2RYY, K2RYW. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, the analyzer I have, the 8594, he has the narrow bandwidth EMI, I think it's option 130 built into it, which lets me look down to a 200 hertz bandwidth. That's minimal to go. With that function and everything, and slowing up the sweep speed tremendously, and with the preamp, I, in reality, have been able to look at a signal at about minus 140, 45 to minus 148. And I know that because I use my generator with a 60 dB pad on the output of the generator, which is a precision 60 dB pad, to be able to measure it, and knowing that I'm actually putting out a signal of that kind of level. I can't see it on the analyzer with the preamp, but the raw analyzer by itself is nowhere near that.
Mel recognized, but Joe, give me that number again. What was the weakest signal level you measured on? I think you said 8594. Give me that number again. Go ahead.
I have an HP8594E, and I have the optional preamp. I don't recall the preamp number. It's a five-digit number. The preamp itself is actually rated for nominally 25 dB gain. I don't recall the exact noise for the preamp. But using the external preamp on the front end of that analyzer and going to the narrowest bandwidth I can go to with the instrument, what it's capable of, I was in reality able to look at a signal level of around between minus 145 to 148, somewhere in that level, I believe, is what I was able to measure. And I know that because I used a 60 dB pad, precision 60 dB pad on the output of my service monitor to pad the signal down 60 dB below the dial setting. So that gave me something of, you know, I'm reasonably sure I am actually putting at that level. That's what the analyzer could actually see in reality.
Yep, I hear you. And there's a catch. If you weren't using the New England technique, there's a chance that what you measured might not have been real. You were close, but there could be some error. Your signal generator has an internal oscillator that runs somewhere around 0 dBm. When you set the dial to minus 122, you're really adding a 122 dB pad from that oscillator to the output connector of the signal generator, or the IFR, the service monitor. But that internal oscillator is always running at somewhere around 0 dBm. Maybe it's minus 5, maybe it's plus 15, but it's in that vicinity, 0 dBm. Even though you added a 60 decibel pad on the outside, and you are making a measurement at the front end of the preamplifier that was in front of the HP8594, that auxiliary preamplifier, at the front panel of the spectrum analyzer, which has a preamplifier backing that up, you measured what you believe was minus 145. That means there's 145 decibels of difference between what you measured and the level of the oscillator inside of the IFR. The next question is, does the case of the IFR have 145 decibels of shielding? And I think the answer is, I wouldn't stake my life on it. I've seen people make measurements like this, and the leak around signal coming out of the case of the signal generator can become dominant. You move yourself around the room and you see the signal on the screen going up and down. The so-called New England technique means that you put the signal generator in the backyard, 100 feet away from you. You run a 100-foot long cable into the spectrum analyzer that's in the house. And now by the inverse square law, even if the signal leaking out of the case is not 145 dB down. You've added another 30 or 40 dB of shielding by the distance you've done between the two. That's why it's called the New England technique. The guys in New England first invented this one. Without doing that, the minus 145 to 148 could be questionable. I know it's darn good. I'm just worried that it wasn't possibly, it might possibly...
Repeater, timeout.
There is a possibility it wasn't quite that good. You see where I'm going on this one, Joe? To be QLYY, KQLIW.
Yeah, I do see where you're going. I'm going to tell you something about the service monitor. In its day, I didn't buy it this amount of money, but in its day, the service monitor was a $15,000 instrument. It's not a tinker toy. It's not built like very cheaply. It's extremely well built. They use all sorts of semi-rigid line within the instrument itself. It's extremely well put together. And I did ask the guy about the leakage of these older units, which is different to some of the newer ones they have out now. This thing was phenomenal as far as the RF leakage that came out of this thing. They took great steps to ensure that the case did not have any kind of leakage that would cause this kind of problem. So I know what you're saying. You think the generator itself is, well, I'm getting something leaking out of the case itself. And I was using half-inch superflex between the output of the generator with the 60 dB pad and the front end connector of this preamp itself, which actually is this metal case and goes right on the front end of the 8594E. I was using the best shielded cable I could possibly use, but no, they were not 100 feet apart.
Okay. And when you waved your hands around that instrumentation and moved your body around, I think you're telling me with the display you were using then, if the display was updating fast enough, you saw no wiggle of that signal showing you that any leakage was taking place. If leakage was taking place, the signal bouncing off your body and off your hands would be adding in phase and out of phase, therefore you would see the signal jump up and down on the screen when you moved around. But if you had the display set super slow, maybe you wouldn't have been able to see that. Over to you, Joe.
I did try that test. I let the instrument scan it. I think I had the scanner in about maybe 5 or 10 seconds across the width of the screen. That's how you're going to get those kind of low-level measurements. Oh, I absolutely thought about that. I moved my hand. I even moved the cables. I didn't get any kind of change in the level, so I had fairly good shielding. I was very confident about that.
Okay, you said the right word. Sounds good. Mel, K2KEY, go right ahead.
You have answered my question. That's what I was going to ask. Because when talking to Hewlett Packard, which not the easiest people in the world anymore to talk to, he used to have a terrific rapport with them. The 8566B was not a slouch either. I don't know how much that instrument was when it was new. And the claim was on that time. Now, I'm going back a number of years now. This was not a question that I questioned them recently. This was a number of years ago. However, at 10 hertz resolution bandwidth, to have a frequency stability that they claim down to minus 134 dBm up to like 20 gigs, I questioned that. Is that feasible? And they said, well, I'm not using it correctly in the right environment, Dick, over.
In order to get to 22 gigs, that thing goes to fifth harmonic mixing. And each harmonic of the mixing subtracts 6 dB. So you're losing close to 30 decibels of insertion loss in the front end mixer when you're at 20 gigahertz. Let me think now. The local oscillator, which is a gig tuned thing, goes from roughly 2 to 4 gigs and to 2 to 4, 5 to 10. Yep, I think it's fifth harmonic mixing. There's 30 dB of extra loss, which really means 30 dB less sensitivity if there's no preamplifier in front. And if they're claiming they got minus 134 at 22 gigs, you're talking to a guy who is misreading a data sheet and doesn't know what he's talking about. If he's claiming that barefoot 8566 Echo, or Baker or whatever, which, by the way, in the late 90s was a $70,000 machine, if he's claiming that goes down to minus 134 at 22 gigahertz, I think you should be selling him a bridge in Brooklyn and asking for top dollar. Over to you, Mel. KQLIW.
Peckley at 10 hertz resolution, no less, Vic. Over.
Yeah, there's only three things wrong here. Fifth harmonic mixing, 30 dB of extra loss, that's 30 dB of change in sensitivity. The basic spectrum analyzer doesn't have enough spectral purity of its what's called lock and roll. It does do a phase lock at the beginning of each sweep. Then it rolls the voltage-controlled oscillator, Yik-Tun voltage-controlled oscillator, a